If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for being here with us, Sheldon. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh my goodness, we are talking about Babyface today.
One of my favorite producers of all time.
Was his birthday, I think, yesterday, isn't it?
Yeah, and he turned 65.
65.
Yeah.
Doesn't look a day older than 35.
Hence Babyface.
All right, so let's talk about your selection. Superwoman. It was such a popular song.
Yeah, 1988. One of the first big Babyface, L.A. Reid and Babyface hits. And the selection for today, I mean, I think every time I come on, I try not to do something obvious.
Yes.
Because, like, we could have done, like, I'll Make Love to You and End of the Road and, like, all the big numbers. But yes, I thought, let's just go on a slightly different journey. Also, I've chosen songs from, like one from the 80s, mm-hmm, one from the 90s, mm-hmm, one from the 2000s. Like, just try to spread the love. Just to show the immensity of the repertoire of this guy. So this was Karen White. Incidentally, Karen White was married to a guy called Terry Lewis.
Yes.
So of the combo Jimmy Jam and
Terry Lewis. Yes.
Yeah. And in that song, you can actually hear like a Prince influence,
uh-huh,
because Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were heavily involved with Prince,
mm,
before. They were actually school buddies. Mm. Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis and Prince all went to high school together. And then they had a partnership going into the 1980s, but then they had a falling out. But anyway, Terry Lewis was married to Karen White in 1992 to 1999. They were married to each other. So this is before this Superwoman, you can hear Prince influences in the music. But Babyface actually started off as a musician, as a singer.
Mm.
He was in a band called Manchild. That's when he started. And he was 15 years old at the time. And they released two albums together, Manchild, the band, and there he met one of his future collaborators, a guy called Daryl Simmons.
Mm.
And from there, he went onto a band called Deal.
Mm.
And in Deal, he met L.A. Reid.
Mm.
And so his other collaborator. So, you know, over the years, they spent many years collaborating with each other, and Daryl Simmons is still collaborating with Babyface to this very day. L.A. Reid's now moved on to other things. He's become a record executive.
Mm.
But I think they released five albums with Deal. And in 1988, they started writing for other people. This specific song, Superwoman, was off Karen White's debut album.
Yes.
And it was a mega hit.
Huge.
Everywhere. And it's like, I think it's like an iconic cult favorite.
Absolutely.
Song. Like, anyone who knows anything about R&B,
yeah, this is a number.
And after 1988, they decided to start their own record label, a company called LaFace,
yeah,
which is a combination of L.A. Reid and Babyface. Mm-hmm. And they became this hot duo. Like, you couldn't turn around and there wasn't a Babyface and an L.A. Reid song on the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like the black equivalent to John Lennon and Paul McCartney.
Mm.
Like, L.A. Reid, Babyface, everyone wanted a piece of the action because they were so hot.
Mm.
And it was just one number one after the next number one. I was actually looking at one of the Grammy Award like years where Babyface got 13 Grammy Awards. And
who does that?
And he's the only producer in history to have won Producer of the Year four times. Three times in a row. So he won it in 95, 96, 97. He won the Producer of the Year award three times consecutively. And he's won it four times, more than any other producer. More than Quincy Jones, even.
Wow.
Right? So he's an iconic producer. 13 Grammy Awards, like, iconic. And everyone wanted a piece of the Babyface pie because, obviously, he was the guy with the Midas touch. And if you look now, it's like 40 years later, he's still, like, producing for Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, Fall Out Boy, rock bands, pop bands, R&B artists, hip-hop artists. He did a thing with Lil Wayne, Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson. And the names just go on. Celine Dion. He's done, like, stuff with everybody. And they decided to start this record label called LaFace. It was signed up to a company called Arista Records, mm-hmm. which was owned by Clive Davis. Mm-hmm. And these guys were big news. Mm-hmm. And they helped discover so many artists. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the big names that they helped discover was Toni Braxton.
Yeah.
And I love this one clip of Babyface talking about how do you replicate a Toni Braxton song. And the way you do it is you drink a glass of water, you drink everything, and you leave just a little bit of a tidbit of water under your tongue, and then you sing as if you have water under your tongue. Because if you listen to Toni Braxton, that's how she always enunciates her words. It's like never full. It feels like there's something there all the time. So Toni Braxton was one of their big discoveries. Pink was another discovery by LaFace. They had Usher in there. It was like the just TLC.
Sure.
It was just the biggest R&B. And I remember I was a teenager at the time that LaFace was a big thing. And I was a very unusual kid because, I don't know, like there's always that unusual kid. You know, like usually from my group of friends, they were like these rockers. You know, they'd sit with dirty hair and they're like super grungy and like they disgruntled about life and whatever. And I was the only kid at school listening to like Babyface. They were like, who's Babyface? I'm like, Babyface? What do you mean, Babyface? Like, I had the Toni Braxton albums and the Whitney Houston albums. I had all of, I was like, what? Babyface is the man. And so it was just, he was the signature sound of a generation.
Yeah. So we're celebrating Babyface today. If you have a story, I mean, one of the songs, maybe you know of a song that he produced or wrote, let us know. 086-000-0959. We continue celebrating Babyface after this.
Kaya Talk. Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
All right, that's obviously Whitney Houston, Exhale. Oh. So I've got a question.
Oh, my God. It's a quiz. Whitney Houston's voice.
That album, Waiting to Exhale, how many of those did he produce, Babyface?
What do you mean?
The songs in that album.
Oh, he produced the whole album.
Oh.
Waiting to Exhale.
So it's not even a trick question.
Yeah, no. The whole soundtrack is Babyface.
And everyone was a hit.
Yeah, so there was the Mary J. Blige. There was the Brandy. There was the TLC song on there. There was the... There was three Whitney Houston songs on there. There was Waiting to... There was Exhale, Shoop Shoop. There was Why Does It Hurt So Bad? And then there was Count On Me with CeCe Winans.
Sure.
So, before I move on to that. So... Babyface was very shy as a child, and he lost his dad in the eighth grade to lung cancer, and so his mother basically brought up the brothers and him. It was six brothers.
Yeah.
Eventually, the brothers ended up forming a band called After Seven. I don't know. They were quite popular in the early 90s, After Seven. So there was two of the brothers and Babyface that were in a band together called After Seven.
You know, it never connected.
Yes.
I'm now only discovering it for the first time. So Babyface was connected to the After Seven?
Yes. The three of the brothers were in the band, including Babyface himself.
So obviously in the studio, there's more than just me and you. There's Eddie, who keeps reminding me I'm old.
We're all old. We ain't getting younger.
I definitely remember After Seven.
Yes. Yeah. So he started his career very young, and... obviously, he met some very influential people right at the beginning, because the way he got his name, Babyface, was from Bootsy Collins. Bootsy Collins is an iconic bass player from a band called Funkadelic and Parliament. And he went on to do a lot of session work. And when he met Babyface for the first time, he was like, oh, you got such a kitten in his face, Babyface. And that name stuck. Mm. But anyway, so with the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack, Babyface had...
What's his name? Kenneth Edmund.
Kenneth Edmund.
Yes.
And he had produced some of the work on The Bodyguard and actually landed up winning Album of the Year. So there's this thing called The Big Four, which is album, song, record, and Best New Artist.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've added another two to that, Songwriter of the Year and Producer of the Year. And Babyface has got Album of the Year, has got Song of the Year and Record of the Year. Obviously not this new artist, but so he owns Grammys in all three of those categories, and he's also got Producer of the Year and Songwriter of the Year. So anyway, he had done the Bodyguard soundtrack, and Forest Whitaker was doing Waiting to Exhale, the movie, and he was like, Whitney, you in the movie? This was her second big movie because The Bodyguard was a fluke. And then they were like, oh, well, The Bodyguard worked. Let's do another movie with Whitney. And Forest Whitaker was the director. And he was like, well, Whitney, you're doing the movie. You're obviously going to do the soundtrack. It's like, hell no, I'm not doing the soundtrack. I'm going to be a real actress this time around.
I'm curious because just like The Bodyguard, was the film more popular? It's very rare for the film to be as popular as the record, as the album. And with both, it was right up there.
Yeah, I think Waiting to Exhale was a cult favorite. Commercially, I don't think it was like an uber success like The Bodyguard. But amongst circles, you know, that demographic,
it was a home movie.
It was the movie. It was a hit. Mm. But the soundtrack was much bigger.
Yeah. Got you.
Anyway, so he does Forest Whitaker says, you've got to do the soundtrack. Mm. And she's like, no, I'm not doing the soundtrack. I'm not singing on this. Anyway, so he says, well, guess what? Babyface is coming down and he's doing the soundtrack. So you're going to meet with him and he's going to convince you. And so anyway, she meets up with Babyface, and Babyface is like, you are doing the soundtrack. And she's like, no, I'm not doing the soundtrack. He's like, you know what? Let me write some songs. And then you tell me that you're not doing the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he writes Exhale, Shoop Shoop, and presents it to her. And he says, listen, I've even got a better idea. Why don't we do the whole album, female artists, only female artists and only sisters?
Yes.
Black female artists. Yeah. We'll only get black female artists on the soundtrack. And Whitney was like, okay, that sounds like it's up my alley. Mm. I can support that. Mm. So he gives her Exhale, and she listens to the demo, and she's like, Babyface has lost it. What is this? Shoop, shoop, shoo-be-doo, shoop. Like, where are the lyrics? There's no lyrics. Yeah. And Babyface, when he was writing the song, he got to the chorus and he just put the shoop shoops in as like a place maker.
Yes, as in we'll add something later.
We're going to add something here later, but we're not going to do something now.
Yes.
You know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And then he was like, actually, I like this. I think it's quite cool. So it's one of the very few times in music history where the chorus does not have any lyrics.
Yeah.
It's just an improvisation on the word shoop. Yeah. And he thought, this shoop thing sounds quite cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, Whitney was like, no, this is not going to work. Mm. She was like, you're crazy. You've lost your touch.
Yeah.
And then she went into studio and recorded it. And when they were recording it and she was adding the backing vocals over that, she was like, wow, this actually sounds quite good.
The shoop is working.
Yeah. And it ended up going to number one. So it went to number one. And it was number one for 1 week. And then the next week, One Sweet Day by Boyz II Men and Mariah Carey goes to number one and spends 16 weeks at number one. But that wasn't written by Babyface. That was written by Walter Afanasieff and Mariah Carey.
Yes.
But obviously Babyface had a lot to do with the success of Boyz II Men because I'll Make Love to You and End of the Road are both Babyface songs. So Babyface was everywhere. And at the same time, he had another big number one with Madonna's Take a Bow, which spent 7 weeks at number one. So between End of the Road, I'll Make Love to You, and Take a Bow, he was at number one for like over 30 weeks as a songwriter. That's huge. And in total, he's probably spent close to 60 weeks at number one with different songs that he's produced for different artists. So the Babyface story is iconic. I mean, just thinking about like what the man has been able to do and starting off like as an artist, but and then realizing, and I think this is the big thing, people often start a journey thinking the idealized version, or we've been socialized to believe that the idealized version is this being on stage and being a rock
and
star.
And being the face of something.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think Babyface quickly realized, and that's when they converted over to start LaFace Records, that he didn't want to be a big rock star. He wanted to write music. Mm. That was his craft. His craft was crafting music and production. Mm. And he changed his focus to doing that. Mm. And by doing that, he found his inner gift, which is an amazing thing. And I think all of us need to do that kind of soul searching to realize, you know, what is it that makes us distinct from other people? Because we've all got something that nobody else can do. Anyway, LaFace Records did quite well. Obviously, there were a few problems, like Toni Braxton landed up going bankrupt at the height of her success. TLC, exactly the same thing. I think the guys probably weren't managing their artists properly. Because although they were getting big sales, like Crazy Sexy Cool by TLC was iconic. It had waterfalls on it, like the biggest hits by TLC. And yet at that time, the band declared bankruptcy.
Yes, they struggled, yeah.
And Toni Braxton, the same situation. Big cars, lots of big hits and all the stuff. And her album Secret was the pinnacle of her career. And bankrupt at that point as well because of issues with the record company. Anyway, the band, the record company carried on until about 1999. And then at that point, Arista was bought over by BMG and they got rid of Clive Davis. They were like, bruh, you're too old. You're out of touch. You need to go. You need to move on with your life. And they fired him. And they got L.A. Reid in his place. So L.A. Reid took over Arista Records, and at that point they dissolved LaFace Records. And since then L.A. Reid's been involved as a record executive. He landed up going from Arista to Epic. At Epic he took over the Michael Jackson estate, and he was the curator for the Michael Jackson estate and all the posthumous albums. And then recently he started up I think a company called Hitco with Charles Goldstuck, who's a South African iconic South African music businessman who was at one point the CEO of Sony International. And they started this company together, L.A. Reid and Charles Goldstuck. Anyway, but L.A. Reid moved on, became an executive, and Babyface continued writing the songs, doing what he does best. And as the years have progressed, new hits, inspirations. And what I find interesting is that it's not just limited to R&B. He's done things across the board.
That's how you know he's just
He's
artist.
Tried and tested.
He's an artist.
Tried and tested. Like full
out. Not a gimmick.
No. And trying new things with new artists all of the time.
We've got more music.
Yes.
Where he sings.
Yes.
Where he sings.
Yes, himself. Yes, yes.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more tribute to Babyface.
Kaya Talk.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. Like Babyface and
Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder is my boy.
Yeah.
I mean, if I want to be best friends with Stevie Wonder because that guy, the way he can interpret a piece of music.
Yeah.
Look, I must be honest. Babyface is not the best vocalist you've ever heard in your entire life.
Yes, he's not.
And that is why his solo career, although he's released 10 albums, it hasn't been like amazing, like stellar career, like compared to the stuff that he's done
writes,
for other people.
Yes, yes.
But this specific song, How Come, How Long, which is about it's about domestic abuse, was featured on an exceptional album. It is one of my favorite albums of all time. It's called The Day.
That album was one of you.
It's an iconic album. The production is phenomenal, of course, because it's Babyface. The songs are exceptional. The album is dedicated to his then wife, Tracy Edmonds.
But this album for me is sort of like it was his baby.
You
know what I mean? Like he crafted it so carefully, so lovingly.
I know.
It was his baby.
Indeed. And I think I gave this album to so many people. Like I gifted it to people because I was like, you've got to
hear
this. It is just an exceptional album. 1996.
And that song, The Day. Like
the day is beautiful. The ballad with the piano, and there's songs with him playing the guitar. It shows his musical diversity. On the album, Mariah Carey does a feature on the album. Kenny G makes an appearance on the album. Stevie Wonder's on the album. It's just like from beginning to end. I mean, if you just, you know what, take some time out, go listen to this piece of music on the weekend.
Do it again
this weekend. Yes. Just listen to this album. It is a masterpiece. It is, to me, a landmark album in R&B music. And it's called The Day. And it was dedicated to Tracy Edmonds, which was Babyface's wife at the time. She was in television production. And she discovered some artists as well that Babyface landed up working with. It landed up getting nominated for 3 Grammy Awards. It didn't win any. How Come, How Long is just a masterpiece. Co-written by Stevie Wonder and Babyface. Just an amazing, amazing product, amazing album, and his second biggest album as far as chart is concerned. Sales, it is his biggest, but as far as charting is concerned, it's his second biggest album, because his biggest album actually comes from our next song that we're going to play shortly. But Babyface discovered Toni Braxton right at the beginning of her career, before she was Toni Braxton, in inverted commas. So Toni Braxton started her career very much in the similar vein to Babyface himself, where she started in a band with her sisters. They were called the Braxtons. And all the sisters have a T name. So Tamar, Toni. They were all T's, like the Kardashians, but the Braxtons. And Trina, Tamar, Tracy, and Tawanda. And they were part of this band. And Babyface and L.A. Reid, they were like, oh my God, that girl, she's hot stuff. And it was Toni Braxton. And they were like, we've actually got a song that we offered to Anita Baker. And Anita Baker's turned it down. She can't do it. It was for a movie called Boomerang, which was the Boomerang movie.
Huge, big movie.
And Eddie Murphy. And the song was called Love Shoulda Brought You Home. And they were like, you know, Anita Baker's turned the song down, and we think you should, you would do it justice.
Brilliant.
And she did the song, and it was a big hit, and it launched her career. And Toni Braxton became this iconic, I mean, I think next to Whitney, she's probably one of the most recognizable voices in R&B music. Like an authentic, like the voice, the belting, the power, the presence, the beauty. She's such a beautiful woman, and great stage presence. Like iconic artist. And they were like, they nurtured her, and they took her into LA, LaFace Records. They produced her most iconic albums, the first album Toni Braxton, the second album Secrets, then after that The Heat, which was an exceptional album as well, all brilliant albums. And then Toni Braxton went through a bit of like an existential crisis. She sort of dropped out of music, went into musical theater, like dropped out of off the face of the earth. And then people started interviewing her and saying, you know, like, what's going on? And she's like, I've retired from music. I'm not doing music anymore. And she, it was done for. This is 2014. And then they announce, actually, I'm in the studio with Babyface again. And they do a duets album called Love, Marriage and Divorce. And this song, which is Hurt You, was the big hit. And it's such a banger. Such a brilliant, like emotionally, it's such an amazing song.
Should we play it?
Gosh.
This is like R&B Wonderland.
Yeah, it is. This is like you. This is the deep dive into R&B.
Because like, Wonderland.
I mean, but Babyface is the king. I couldn't play any other rock songs. I mean, it's the wrong radio station for the Babyface rock songs. But I mean, he also did that and some hip hop and all of that stuff. But I thought, let me just keep it legit here on Kai FM and keep it to the R&B. And then we end off with with the Scissor song.
Yes.
So just to show you, like, I mean, even SZA, who was like the biggest R&B artist of 2023, this song was, it was, it's called Snooze. It was a number 2 hit for SZA. And the song was featured off her second album, SOS. which was highly anticipated and just blew up. It was everywhere. Kill Bill was the big song from the album. And then this was also, this was the sixth single off the album, which went to number two on the charts. And it was originally written for Babyface's Girls' Night Out album, which was his 10th studio album. But they then decided, and so the concept behind the Girls' Night Out album was that it was all songs where he featured with an iconic current female artist. And so SZA was asked to do the song, and then they were like, actually, this would be better for the SZA album. And it was included on the album, and it was a big hit for her. Unfortunately, the songs that came from the book, Babyface album weren't so successful.
Yes.
But this was
it's always a little banger. Bit like that with him.
Exactly.
But listen, thank you.
It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for doing this with us. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. And I hope the audience enjoyed the show.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.